evening. This is N6MEF. My name is Michael. Michael Fox. I'm one of the ADECs for the county and also an AEC for Los Altos. And this evening we're going to be going over some of the program materials for the Mutual Aid Communicator program. These are some enhancements we've recently implemented in the program. This net is going to be recorded. At least I'm trying to record it. Hopefully it should come out okay. Looks like it's working. So we will post that recording on the website, assuming everything continues to go well. I'm not going to do a full roll call because there's probably a huge number of folks on the net, but I would like to get a list of any, if our DEC or ADECs are on the net. So please come back with call signs now.
N6JRC.
Okay, I copied N6JRC, KG6RLR, K6OTT, and K6GAC. Well, if we have any questions, maybe we can get some help there. All right, we're going to start off on slide 2 of the presentation. Hopefully you've all had a chance to download that. If not, please visit the Santa Clara County Aries RACES website. That's www.scc-aries-races.org/MAC, and scroll down to the presentations and download the kickoff presentation. On slide 2, the agenda is pretty simple. We're just going to make sure everybody's aware of the new webpage, the updates that we've made to the GoKit. We're going to go through the performance standards very briefly and talk about the program definition document, and then we'll spend most of our time on the new qualification program. So skipping to slide 4, the new MAC program website is the one I just mentioned, the Standard County Aries RACES website /MAC, and this is where we're going to put all MAC program-related information. Right now, there's the actual program definition document there. There's a couple of PowerPoint presentations. There are some, the performance standards are there. There's some links to some training and links to email groups and such. At the initial part of this rollout, where we're possibly going to be updating things and fixing typos and such, you might want to check it every once in a while, perhaps weekly. But over time, I think things will settle down and we'll be okay. Any significant announcements we're going to put out on the two Yahoo groups, the SCC RACES MAC group and the SCC MAC Discuss group. Okay, and jumping to slide 6, one of the things that came out of working on the MAC program was to define what is the minimum set of equipment that people need. And as we went through the existing GoKit, it became kind of clear that it wasn't exactly specific as to which items in the GoKit were absolutely required versus which ones are nice to have. So we've done some updates to that GoKit and reformatted it, and it is at the same location on the website where the previous GoKit was. And I gave you that URL at the top of page 6. And really the revisions are kind of three different things that we've done. First of all, the stuff in the GoKit is largely the same as before. You may find one or two items that have changed, but mostly it's the same. But what we've done is line by line, we've clarified whether an item is really absolutely required because you really need it to complete your assignments, or whether it's recommended which is something that, you know, most of the time you're going to wish you had it, perhaps like a folding chair, but you can certainly complete an assignment without it. And things that are optional, which are, you know, things you might want to think about if you're planning to get a really complete Go kit, this is something you might want to consider. But and in fact, it may be useful in some assignments, but it's not something you would necessarily use all the time, and certainly not required. The second thing we did was we rearranged the items into some convenient categories that hopefully make it a little bit easier to read. And lastly, we separated the Go kit into three different kit definitions, really. One is the 2-hour kit, one is the standard 12-hour Go kit, and one is a list of items that you might include in an extended kit. For example, something longer than 12 hours, could be 72 hours or even longer. Now, the 2-hour Go kit is kind of a new feature of the Go kit list. And really what it does is align the Go kit with how we actually work. And that is when there is an earthquake or some other type of situation where we might be used, we don't all jump in our car, leave work, and head straight to the location. What we do is we get on the resource net in what we call level 1 operation, and we turn in damage reports. And sometimes we use the Mike scale if it's an earthquake. Sometimes we are looking for flood information or other things. But the first thing we do is resource net level 1, which is damage reports. Then if the situation is escalating and we decide to, or EOCs get opened up and we decide to send people home to pick up their Go kits, we start referring people over to their city nets, and that's level 2 resource net. So the idea of the carry kit is for the first couple of hours of any particular situation, all you really need is a way to talk to the resource net to provide your damage assessment or your damage survey information. And if you decide to go home and check on your home and family and such, then you want to remain in contact with resource net, so you probably need a mag mount antenna or something like that. And so the contents of the 2-hour carry kit are very minimal, just an HT, batteries for a couple of hours, a mag mount antenna, the modified Mercalli or Mike scale, and a notepad and a couple of pens or pencils. If you're not familiar with the Mike scale, it was pointed out last night that that doesn't appear on the website anywhere. So I sent a message off to our webmaster, and he's going to put up a page on that. It's really a scale from 1 to 8 that defines how, the type of damage that was done at an earthquake. So to give you an example, Mike 4 is windows and dishes rattle. And during resource net level 1, it's very simple then to get very specific information like windows and dishes rattle by saying something as simple as, this is N6MEF, Mike 4, Los Altos. And that gives net control a very quick and brief way to gather information. So that's the Mike scale, and we're going to have that up on the website. Some cities have actually gone as far as making little templates so you can print it out and put it in your wallet, which is what I have, and we're going to get those templates up there for you as well. So at this point, let me just stop. We've talked about the new Mac website and the updated Go kit, and see if there's any questions on that. This is N6MEF. I'll take first 5 call signs, please.
KI6LDM.
Okay, KI6LDM, go ahead.
Yes, does the Mike scale replace the what we call the PSA, the personal, maybe the PSA is specific to Cupertino, but I thought that was something that other cities did, where basically there is a count of kinds of damage, ranging from urgent down to superficial or no damage. And we have we've drilled with this before, and typically the EC gets an idea of in a very in a specific area or block or whatever, what kind of damage is there, or is this unrelated? KSXLDM.
Thanks. Great question. Yeah, I believe I know what you're referring to, and this is different. This is for the County Resource Net, and it's for reporting earthquake damage. The form you're using is kind of more of a, I guess I'd equate it to a more detailed and more easy to send over the air version of the windshield survey. And that's something that you guys are actually kind of ahead of the group on. It's a very nice form. The Mike's scale is simply a 1 to 8 scale that, you know, you can use to very quickly identify earthquake damage, and that's all it's for. Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. Thank you. Thank you. And back to the training, KSXLDM. I guess you're net control as well.
Okay, thank you. So the next thing we're going to go over is the performance standards, and that's on page 8. And performance standards sounds pretty heavy and bureaucratic. It's really not. What is it? It's simply a document that itemizes and details an objective set of standards, which we all operate on. And where did it come from is very simple. We took the training that we've all taken over the last several years, went through all of the PowerPoints for net control and field communicator and shadow and that type of thing, and we basically just distilled all of the information out of those PowerPoints into a bullet list of very simple things that you want to do when you're performing some type of emergency communications role. And therefore, it's really just a shorthand version of everything we've been teaching for the last several years. So it's what we really already do. And it's really the how in, you know, how to communicate via emergency communications in Santa Clara County. So there's really three uses of the performance standards. The first use is when someone is being considered to be a MAC. They're not in the MAC program yet. The EC is looking at them to see if they are ready to be a MAC. And this gives the EC an objective set of criteria and makes it easy for the EC to look through and sit down with that candidate and say, well, you know, we need to do a little better here, we need to do a little better there. It's also very useful for the MAC, or in fact the MAC candidate, so they know exactly what people are looking for. This is exactly what somebody is going to review me on if I'm a shadow or if I'm a net control or something else. I know exactly what people expect, and therefore you can use it to review just before you go out on an event or an activity, or even if you're at an activity and you've got a break, you can go through and say, gee, am I doing everything correct? Did I remember to do this and this and this? And so it's a good reference for MAX. And lastly, when we get into the qualifications in a little bit later, this becomes the way that we define whether or not somebody's done the job properly. So it takes the subjectivity out of any evaluations, and when we're looking at somebody who's, for example, performing a shadow job, did they or did they not meet each of these performance standards? If you download the document and look at it, there are six sections. So we divide it into professionalism and communications technique, safety, methods and procedures, equipment, and documentation. And I won't go through all the subheadings here. They're listed on page 9. You can certainly see them when you download the document. But I will skip to page 10. And if you look at this is a simple cut and paste directly from the performance standards in the communications section. So, for example, verbal communications is effective, clear, and concise. Good command of the English language, uses plain English, no 10 codes, no Q codes. properly uses and pronounces letters and numbers. And I think anybody who's taken field communicator or net control classes remembers that this was in the class. And so, once again, it's just kind of distilled down from our classes, either the county classes or the ICS training classes. So it's really, you know, how we normally go about our job. It's the best practices that our best operators do on a day-to-day basis, and it's just codified here now and documented. So let me pause here and see if there's any questions. This is N6MEF. I'll take the first five call signs.
KI6VNQ.
Okay, KI6VNQ, go ahead with your question.
Is this handled, going to be handled at the county level, or is it going to be handled at the city level for qualification?
Well, we're talking about the performance standards right now. The qualifications are currently for county max. I'm not sure if that answers your question, but it would be done by the county at this point. Is that what you're looking for? Or if not, maybe you can help me understand the question better.
No, that wasn't my point. My point was for the information you just gave, is that worked out locally within the cities, or do you then look at the county? Because we have the county training. So is this all handled the same way as the training, or is it done at the city level?
Okay, so for the MAC performance standards, this is simply a document. And the recommendation is that within the city, first of all, I guess it's really, although it's MAC performance standards, it's really just good emergency communications performance standards. The only reason we call it MAC performance standards is because we're going to expect all MACs to do these things. But I think when you look at the document, you'll see, wow, this is what I should do all the time. So I would expect that most cities would want to make sure that all of their emergency communicators, whether they're MACs or not, follow these standards. But that's not required, I guess. This is a required for county MACs only at this point. And we certainly would like feedback from folks, even if they're not MACs, if they think we've got anything wrong here. Hopefully it's pretty good stuff, but if you have an issue with anything in there, we'd like to hear about it. Now, does that answer your question, or am I still off track?
Oh, no, that answers the question, and I have looked through the material, and it looks very good. Thank you. KI6VNQ.
Okay, great. Any other questions before we move on? Okay, hearing none, I'll move to slide 12. And this is really just the outline of the table of contents for the MAC program definition document. The document itself contains, I'd say, kind of two groups of information. The first group is really stuff that's not really new. It's things that have existed for quite a while, and maybe they haven't been documented at all, or they've been documented, you know, and it's hard to find, or it's a little sketchy, or it's unclear. So some of those things are, for example, the entrance requirements to become a MAC. You know, there were some basic things about what equipment you needed, and you had to go prove yourself to your EC, but it really didn't explain how. And so now we've got recommendations of what type of activities the person should do, and the fact that we now have the performance standards the EC can use to determine whether they're ready to perform at the level of a MAC. We never really had much of a documentation on what we expected from MACs as far as, you know, participation and the types of roles they would play. So that's now documented. And most people who have done drills and events are aware of how we match up individuals with resource requests, but that's now documented as well and includes the resource assignment problem that we're going to talk about in a minute. Really, the new information is about the qualifications, and so we're going to go over those next, but we lay out a whole bunch of advanced qualifications. We talk about how the evaluations for those qualifications are done, how recognition will be done. There's a very specific list of all of the details of each of the qualifications. Then we get into how, once we know what people's qualifications are, how we can use those to create teams, response teams that have certain combined skills. And we show how that aligns with ICS and NIMS. And there's some information in there about how we keep up with all the records and do the program management. So on slide 14, we'll get into kind of the new part, the new stuff that's in the document. And anybody who's already a Mac can attest to this, that, you know, once it's kind of like getting a driver's license. It's almost a license to learn. Once you're in the Mac program and you start participating in county events and going to different cities, you start to really learn a lot of new things. And some people get excited about learning a broader skill set. They want to be a shadow. They want to do packet. They want to do net control. They want to be a field communicator. We've got HF activities that Cupertino started, and that's evolving. So there's a lot of different skill sets out there. And some people really dive into a particular skill set. They want to be experts at packet. And so there's a few guys that are really, really working hard on the new packet network. 9600 baud packet network and everything. So what we find is a huge diversity in the number, in the Macs that we have in the program. And for those of you that don't know, there's about 170 some odd Macs in the program. So within that range, there's people that have been there for a while and are very deep, have very deep knowledge in certain areas. And there's other folks who are new and just learning. And that's all very, very good. And it gives us a wide range of resources to draw on. On slide 15, that's all very good, but it also creates a problem. And the problem comes down to when you try to make a resource assignment. So if you're requesting a resource, there's really no way to know for any given drill. If I need somebody to go do something, how do I know what's available to me? Are the people who are at this drill capable of doing a particular function? Are the folks that are currently in staging able to do that function? You know, so what kind of resources are available? How do I request those resources? What name do I call it? You know, do I say I need a really good guy, or, you know, can I be more specific about what type of resource I need? On the assignment side, it's the same kind of problem, but in reverse. So even if I knew exactly what the person wanted, I've got a whole bunch of folks sitting in front of me, perhaps at the staging area or in the operational area, and I don't know individually what all of their capabilities are. I know a few people. Personally, I know a few people. I know some folks are really good at certain things. But I don't know all 170 people in the program, and I never will. So how do we find out which Macs we have in certain areas, generally throughout the county? How do we know, you know, if we've got enough Macs that know packet or not so we can focus on that area? And so we have this dependence on individual knowledge of people, and that creates a problem when we go to match up requests with resources. So that's really the problem we're trying to solve. And on slide 16, it turns out that how we solve that problem is really, really important. And the main reason it's really, really important is because we're volunteers. And, you know, all of us invest our own personal time and our own personal money and equipment and such. And we all have other things to do as well. We have families, other activities, other organizations, jobs perhaps. You know, so if this thing becomes a pain, then we're just not going to bother helping out at all, right? So what we don't want to do is create some kind of bureaucracy where there's a lot of complex rules and extra paperwork. We don't want to have to go to extra meetings to be checked out, to prove ourselves to somebody. We don't want any of that. But what we do want is a solution that works in a volunteer environment. So to solve the problem, we need to be able to define a specific list of capabilities and create a common language around that so that it's easy for someone to request a resource without using a lot of words, and it's easy to match people up to that resource request. And we want to have some tracking so that we know who's got what capabilities. But when we go about solving the problem, one of the key tenets we had is, in creating this program was that it really has to be based on what we already do, where and when we already do it. Okay, so no extra meetings, no extra hoop jumping, that kind of stuff. So on slide 17, the first thing about the program is it's voluntary. So you don't have to do any of this. If you're happy being a Mac, you can go ahead and be a Mac, and that's all you have to worry about. So this is completely voluntary. But it's a program that will help us to standardize and qualify particular individuals and then be able to identify which individuals' capabilities we have out there and assign them to resources. So it really helps the county, and in fact it helps the Mac because he's going to get an assignment that he's good at. When we looked at the fact that we have these Macs, some of which have very high proficiency in certain areas, some of which have very broad skill sets, we looked at, again, you know, what is it we normally do? And what we normally do is things like field communications, net control, shadow, packet, and HF is emerging. So I said, okay, well, that's pretty easy. And then we have different levels of proficiency. So how many levels should we have? Well, we picked three. Why three? Because the old joke is two is too few and four was too many. But actually, we looked at two and said, you know, two is probably too few because it may create big steps that are, you know, take longer to achieve. So we don't want to have too many steps, but three seemed to be reasonable when we started looking at the actual type of assignments that are typical and that we expect in the future for different roles that we play. So we'll see how that goes. Right now, the level three is preliminary, and you'll see in the document it says work in progress. So we're just, you know, started to jot down some ideas on what that might look like, and it's by no means codified yet. So if you take that idea of, you know, kind of on the y-axis, you've got levels of proficiency, and on the x-axis, you've got the different skill sets, and you go to slide 18, what you see there is the skill sets across the top, field communicator, net control, shadow, packet, and HF. And up the side, you see the expertise levels or proficiency levels. Level one is independent, level two is advanced, and level three is specialist. And the foundation of the whole thing rests on being a Mac. Okay, that's the most important thing is having somebody who's signed up to be a Mac to commit themselves to helping out at the county level. And then everything else builds on top of that as an optional qualification. Now on slide 19, it explains how you earn a qualification, and it's actually really simple. There's, you know, the document is long because it takes a lot of words to kind of describe things, but I think when you read it, you go, oh, that's simple. So there's prerequisites, there's training. For example, if you want to be a net control, you should take the net control class. There's participation requirements, things like checking into the weekly SVECs or SVECsNet, participating as a net control in an exercise like a drill or an event, etc. And there's some minimum equipment requirements. And I think you're going to find, as you read through, that if you're an active MAC already and you've been doing net control exercises or you've been doing shadow duties or you've been a field communicator, you already have taken the classes, you already have done the participation requirements, and you already have the equipment. And again, it's that concept of what we already do, where and when we already do it. So have a look for yourself, but I think you'll see that with few exceptions, you probably already meet many of the requirements that are defined there. So you get all the requirements satisfied, and then there's an evaluation. And the evaluation is simply you go to a drill or an event where you're doing your normal thing, you're shadowing somebody, you're acting as net control, and somebody, an evaluator, we call it a MAC evaluator, is monitoring your performance. And we pattern the MAC evaluator after the VE, the volunteer examiner. And if you think about a volunteer examiner, to give an exam for a technician class, they have to be a general class or above. Well, to give an evaluation of a level 1 MAC, you have to be a level 1 qualification, you have to be a level 2 or above. To be a VE, you also have to take a class or at least read a manual and take a test on how to actually conduct exams. And to be a MAC evaluator, you have to take a class and pass a trial evaluation on how to actually evaluate MACs. And the idea here is to make sure that everybody that goes through the program, all MACs get the same level of treatment, a consistent review process, and it's all based on the objective criteria defined in the performance standards. And the MACs evaluators themselves, because they've already gone through the very same thing they're evaluating you on, they have already demonstrated to another person that they're capable of that level or higher. And there's no gimmies here. The people that are going to be evaluators are not made evaluators by edict. They actually have to prove that they have the equipment and they've taken the training and they've participated in the events and they've been observed by others, just like every other MAC. Okay, going on to slide 20, once we have people that are qualified, and it's going to take some time, it'll be slow at first because we have a limited number of evaluators at the beginning, and it will build up over time. But once we start to have some number of, MACs that have these qualifications, we reach some kind of critical mass, then we can start to request resources by resource type. So instead of saying, hey, I need a really good net control, somebody can say, I need an N2 or a November 2 or a net control 2. Or instead of saying, I've got a basic field communicator role, we can say we need a Foxtrot 1 or a field communicator 1. So it's easy to then request a resource, and then multiple people, whether they're net control for resource net, whether they're the staging manager, whether they're an operations manager, can look at the list of folks they have available and very quickly match up a resource to a resource request using the qualifications. Now, because we recognize that not everyone is going to get a qualification because it's voluntary, and because it's going to take time for people to get these qualifications, we're always going to have this secondary method, which is the method we use today, based on just personal knowledge of individuals and kind of a do the best we can type of matchup. So the idea is if we use the qualifications for assignment, the person who requests the assignment gets exactly what they asked for, and the person who's going out on assignment gets a job that they're qualified for, and they're not stressed about it. They know exactly what kind of things they're going to be expected to do when they get there. Oops, I haven't ID'd in a while. This is N6MEF. Okay, on slide 21, so what does that mean for regular MACs? Well, no change. So there's no change to anyone who is an existing MAC. Now, we are introducing a minimum participation level for MACs, And the reason for that is if you demonstrate your capabilities to become a MAC and then you do nothing for some period of time, you are not going to be current with the latest forms, the latest procedures and such. And it's not like you forgot how to talk on the radio, but you're not going to know the current procedures. You're not going to be familiar with the people. You're not going to know where things are at the county radio room. You're not going to know where how we work at drills and such. So the participation level was defined to be, you know, what is the minimum that would keep somebody current? And what we picked was over a two-year period of time, you have to attend two county events. And so, you know, average one a year, but it doesn't, they don't have to be one per year. They could both be in the same year. But over a two-year period of time, you have to go to just two events. And the concept was if you do that, then it's most likely you're up to speed on, you know, what we currently do on the resource net and how we assign resources and such. So a MAC is still someone who has gone through meeting the minimum requirements and been recommended by their EC and approved by the chief radio officer, and they continue to participate in the MAC program. And the qualifications we've been talking about are an optional add-on beyond the MAC program for folks who are interested in doing that. So on slide 22, where are we with the program? Well, it's live. I mean, the MAC program has been live for a while, but these enhancements are now live. And we've actually already got some initial evaluators qualified. How did we do that without having evaluators to evaluate them? We used a bootstrap process where we had, I think it was six or seven people all in the room, and when each person demonstrated that they had passed FEMA IS-100 class, for example, they held up their certificate, and five other people or six other people saw the certificate. So it was, you know, no cheating, no gimmies, no sliding by. Every person that is currently an evaluator has had to demonstrate each of their capabilities to at least several other folks. And that number of people will grow over time. When we get the first people in and they get qualified, I've already been approached by several folks who want to become evaluators. So the more evaluators we have, the faster we'll be able to get more people through the qualification program, and it should just grow and grow. Now the big question is, can you actually get these evaluations done according to our key principle, which is what we already do, where and when we already do it? And the answer is, yes, we can. And the proof of that is at the drill we just had this Saturday, there were people assigned as net control and people assigned as shadows and such, and Pat Moore and some others were observing behavior. Now, we didn't announce this ahead of time because we weren't sure we'd be ready to do it, and we didn't have all the forms ready and all that kind of stuff, but we were meticulously taking notes and observing performance. And as a result, there are some folks who have already passed part of their qualifications, and we'll let them know who they are very soon, probably in a week or two when we get all the logs and all that kind of stuff back. But we'll be able to check off that so-and-so did the proper log, they performed their shadow duties properly, et cetera, et cetera. So this was perfect proof because they didn't even know they were being evaluated, and the event went on as normal. So that's the key, is making sure we can pull off evaluations at a drill or an event and not impact the drill or event, and also not impact the person's ability to, you know, go about performing their assignment. This is N6MEF. So what we're working on right now is creating the, I call them the job aids or tools, evaluation forms and such, that will make it a lot more easy for a MAC evaluator to go through and perform the evaluation function. And we've got some ideas. ideas based on what we learned at this drill, and we're going to be applying those. We've got a drill coming up with Cupertino. It has a fairly big drill in October, and there's also the quarterly drill that's coming up. So we're going to be looking at trying to use those opportunities to do our second round of evaluations and see if we can't get the process to be a little more standardized and then roll it out in the next round of drills even larger. So that's where we are. In the future, what you'll be able to do when you sign up for an event is to request an evaluation. So you sign up for an event and you say, I'd like to be checked out as Field Communicator 1 or something. And depending on how many evaluators we have, we'll be able to get through those. Okay, last slide is really action items. So what do we need to do? Well, first thing I'd suggest is going to the MAC website and downloading the Go Kit, the new Go Kit. That's actually not on the MAC website. It's on the URL I gave earlier in the presentation. But download the performance standards, read through them. I think you'll see it's really what we already do, just written down there for you in a nice, concise format. And download the program definition and read through it. Some of the stuff, like how we deal with NIMS and things, you may not care about. So that's in there for some stuff we're working with the state on. So, they care about that kind of stuff. Most folks probably don't. But have a read through and see what you think. If you have questions or feedback, we have a new Yahoo email list / forum called SCC MAC Discuss. And that's where we'd like to have all of the feedback and discussion happen. And that way, everybody gets to see the feedback and comment, and we get a really good flavor for the whole group and what they think. And, of course, when you read through the documents and you find out, wow, I'd like to try out for a couple of these qualifications, then just go through and check the prerequisites, look at your training, look at your participation records, look at your equipment. I don't know if I mentioned earlier, but anything you've done in the past 2 years will count. So the training database has all that information in there, and we'll go through and say, yep, you've had the net control class, yep, you did, you participated in this drill and this event. You're already done with the training and participation requirements. And then all you need to do is go through an evaluation. So watch for more information about when evaluations will be done, and we'll make those announcements on the two MAC lists. Okay, so that concludes the presentation, and I'll take some questions now. This is N6MEF, and I'll take the first 5 call signs. Wow, not a single question. I must be an incredible presenter. Just ask again before I close the net. Any questions on any part of the presentation this evening?
AE6TIM.
Okay, KE6TIM. Go ahead, please.
Michael, you might mention, I think you mentioned it last night, that there will be some information on the website that people can track their progress. Might be a good idea to mention KE6TIM.
Oh, excellent point. Yeah, one of the questions folks had last night was, well, how do we keep track of all this? And the answer is, it's actually going to be pretty straightforward. If you look at slide 18, where you see the little checkerboard diagram there. What we're going to have on the county website is a web page that looks pretty much just like this picture. And as you go through and complete your qualifications, each of the little squares will light up. So, for example, let's say you've completed Field Communicator 1, and you're starting to get some of the things done on Net Control 1. Well, Field Communicator 1 box would show green because it's done, and Net Control box would show blue because it's partially done, and Shadow 1, Packet 1, HF 1, and the rest would be gray. So you'll be able to click on that box and drill down and see, okay, well, I've taken this class and I've done the participation, but I still need the eval. And you'll be able to see your participation there. Also, let me drop. One of the other questions that came out last night was, well, if I show up at a staging area, how does that staging manager know what my capabilities are if he doesn't have a list? And actually, the county database does get periodically downloaded to a variety of folks at least once a week. So we do have the lists out there in the event of an emergency. But what we're going to do, just like when you take a class at the county, you can go in and print off your class participation certificate. We're going to have a little credential that you can print out, and it'll be the size that would go behind your badge and your badge holder or in your wallet. And, you know, we're not going to try to be, you know, like the U.S. government or the FBI, but it will be hard to duplicate. And it will basically identify that, A, first of all, you're a MAC, and B, if you have any optional optional qualifications, it'll list those. So it'll be very simple to just show your card, and whoever's the staging manager can check you in and say, okay, you've got Field Communicator 1, Net Control 1, Net Control 2, and Shadow 1. And he'll know exactly what types of activities you can perform. So thanks for that that prompt there. Any other questions before we close the net? This is N6MEF.
AE6ZY.
AE6ZY, go ahead.
First compliments, this is great stuff. My question is regarding a complete list of requirements for MAC. This is about training and even to equipment as far as GoKit and so forth. I know there's been some activity as far as background checks and that kind of stuff. So is that something that's going to be incorporated into this, at least in terms of a requirements list at some point?
Thank you. Great question. Yeah, if you look at the MAC Mutual Aid Communicator Program definition on page 7, it lists the entrance requirements administrative. And those things are, for example, you have to be 18 years old, you have to have a California driver's license or California state-issued identification card, and you know, a few other things, DSW card. And it says must have completed or agreed to complete a live scan, electronic fingerprint capture, and background check. So that is part of the requirement to be a MAC, and got it in there. Does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you, A6ZY.
Okay, any other questions in 6MEF? AF6AE, go ahead.
Yes, AF6AE. What's the path for somebody that's entirely new to this process? Are we supposed to be working with our local community ARES folks first, or do we go directly to the county for training and then go back and report in?
Okay, let me just clarify the question. Are you talking about somebody who's not yet a MAC?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, So that is starting on page 7 also, that's described. So the process is there are certain requirements that have to be met for entrance, and we talked about the background check, being 18 years of age, having a DSW, et cetera. There are a couple of training courses, and you'll find links to both of those on the MAC webpage that I mentioned earlier. And these are essentially, the first one is for brand new hams who just got their license. It's called Intro to Emergency Communications. And the second one is called Fundamentals of Emergency Communications. And that's for somebody who has either taken the intro class or they may be experienced but from another area and they don't know about our procedures. So that covers all of the activities around the resource net and message passing and such. There's some other FEMA training requirements, there's some minimum equipment requirements and such. And to make a long story short, you would certainly work with your city first and go through, just read through those first few pages of the document there, and it takes you through the whole process. You meet your qualifications, or you meet your requirements, and then you talk with your city EC and tell them, you know, I'd like to be a MAC. And he will then have a look at your performance in city events and such and look at the MAC performance standards and say, well, I'd like to see you improve here and here and here. Or he may say, nope, you're perfect as you are. I'll go ahead and make the recommendation. The EC makes a recommendation to the county, and the county chief radio officer can accept it or decline it. Usually, of course, he accepts it. And then you become a MAC. Does that answer your question? AF6AE, that was very, very scratchy. I'm not sure I got that, but give me try one more time.
You answered the question fully. Thank you, AF6AE.
Yeah, that was much better. Thanks. Any other questions before we close the net? Okay, well, thank you very much for attending. And as I mentioned, I've been recording this. Hopefully the recording will work, and I'll try to get that posted in the next day or so. And with that, I will close the net and return the frequency to its normal use. This is N6MEF.